Relatively Geeky presents Doom Speak. Doom 2099, number 16. Welcome to the first interim sequestered episode of Doom Speak, in which we once were observing and celebrating one of the most important eras in comicsdom, the issuance by Marvel Comics of a comic book bearing the glorious name of Doctor Doom. But as you know, the comics industry has gone into a bit of a coronavirus-fueled hiatus. So in this episode, we'll be looking at Doom 2099, number 16, and I'll explain why when we go over feedback. But first, a little feedback. And before we get to conversation about our last episode, where we talked about Doctor Doom number 6, let me reference a piece of feedback I received for another show, but which ties directly to this episode. And that was from Mike Zomkowski, who wrote in recently about a Doom-led episode 149 of the Quarterbin podcast. And he pointed out that he missed the Doom 2099 issues that I covered a few years back and asked if there was any chance that they would appear again, that title would appear again on the Quarterbin. And the upshot was that probably not, but maybe after this Doctor Doom title ended its glorious and world-shaking run many years from now, perhaps I would consider doing Doom 2099 over here on Doomspeak. And then, Diamond stops shipping comics the week before Doctor Doom 7 comes out? Coincidence? I think not. I'm not saying that Big Comic is the cause of this current worldwide pandemic, but they are certainly taking advantage of the crisis to pause the narrative storytelling of the glorious and wondrous Doom, just as the Mighty One is about to return to Latveria and liberate his homeland again. That is when the series is delayed? Yeah, likely story. But we, at Doomspeak Enterprises LLC, will not be frightened away. We will, with appropriate guidelines for social distancing and self-isolation, continue to bring you Tales of Doom. And we're going to do that this episode with the aforementioned Doom 2099-16. All the way back on Quarterbin episode 49, a number of years ago, I covered issue 1 of Doom 2099, one of my all-time favorite comic series ever, because of course it is. And every 10 episodes of the Quarterbin, I revisited the series and ended up covering 15 issues of the title between episodes 49, 59, 69, 79, 89, and 99. All of those episodes, by the way, are available on the Quarterbin Classics podcast feed. Now, there are a lot of reasons why I stopped my coverage at issue 15, but most fundamental of all is that I never found issue 16 in the Quarterbins. So I brought that miniseries to a close. But here we are with this opportunity. So I'm bringing that segment back, at least for this one episode, to cover that particular issue. And you'll see shortly this issue is a one-off. It's a fill-in type of story. So that's why I'm only covering the one issue. It really does stand alone. So that is how we've gotten to where we are with this episode. But before we get to that issue, let's go over the feedback from last episode about Doctor Doom, issue 6. TARDIS Rider forwarded the episode with this comment. When you're getting ready to meet your doom, be sure to give Professor Allen a listen. He's almost as smart as Reed Richards. Hardy har har. Fortunately, the Empire Six defended me. Does Doom look amused? Comparing the wretched Richards to Professor Allen is a transgression against the Latverian Arts Council that I would not dare make again. The professor continues to curry favor with his latest recounting of Doom's grand tale. Now that's more like it for feedback. Pay close attention to everybody, okay? I mean, that's how you do it. The Empire Six also posted a picture of a retail store near him, and he showed a pic of a poor, lonely Mr. Fantastic toy, all alone. Why is Doom not surprised that Richards would make a fantastic peg warmer? Which is about all that guy is good for. Excellent point, Empire Six. Excellent point. Dr. Ange had a comment on that episode, specifically on the cover, where Doom and Kang are in profile, face-to-face, hands gripping each other. That cover definitely looks like a riff on the famous Schwarzenegger-Carl Weathers bro greeting in the original Predator. Great call, Doc. Thank you. And we got this from Podcasting's Michael Bailey. Professor, another excellent episode. This issue sounded really offbeat. And because of that, I think I enjoyed hearing you talk about it more than ones fully dealing with the ongoing story. I have no idea why this is. Maybe I like more introspective stories these days. Anyway, since I'm not reading the series and or have opinions on it, I will end with a question regarding the blurb for next issue. Do you think Marvel has a Word file that just contains the phrase, "Doom returns to Latveria to get revenge on those who have usurped his throne"? I mean, if they have that saved so they can plug it into solicitations on a regular basis, that would make sense. I mean, it seems like this happens a lot. As always, Hail Doom, Podcasting's Michael Bailey, and a hearty Hail Doom to you as well. And yes, I do imagine that that bit of exposition, that plot point, probably has its own space in a templates folder somewhere. Social media for that episode also came from Sir Martin of Grey, Laurel, a.k.a. Mountain Flower 1, Chris from Professor Frenzy, Seth Tucker, Old School Ross, Wonder Woman, Warrior for Peace, Sir, I Was Joe, who is now part of the DC Everything Else podcast, Derek from the History of Comics on Film, Mike from Comics in the Golden Age, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Drew from Comics for Fun and Profit, Billy D, Dr. Joe Gilmore, Luke Giaconetti, and Gene Hendricks, both from Two True Freaks, Clinton from Coffee and Comics, Ed Moore from Teal Productions, and our network Listeners of the Year, Countess Ruth and Count Darren of the Sutherlands. So let's take a break here, play a promo, and when we get back, we're going to go back to 1994 to talk about life in 2099.
Born and raised to make a kill, she was not given her own will. Her first hit left her feeling only disdain. She ran to Gotham's no man's land, learned from Barbara Gordon's hand, that starts the legacy of Cassandra Cain. Rising from the devastation of no man's land, a new warrior joined the Bat family. Daughter of David Kane and Lady Shiva, trained from birth to be the ultimate killer, but choosing instead to save lives. She's been Batgirl, Black Bat, and Orphan. She is Cassandra Cain. Join Mike Staley as he goes through every appearance of one of DC's most underrated characters in Silent Night, the Cassandra Cain podcast. On iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and at silentnight.podomatic.com.
And we're back. Doom 2099, number 16, had a cover date of April 1994 and a cover price of $1.25. A new Marvel comic for $1.25. Anyway, the cover by Scott Collins and John Hundridge shows the silver and blue visage of Doom, a cybernetic right hand reaching towards the reader. Across the bottom of the page, we see in red these three words. Dictator for life. It's a pretty great poster-worthy image. The story, Long Live King Doom the First, was written and drawn by Ernie Colon. We start in cyberspace. Doom and Wire are surfing through it, on the lookout for something an Alchemex employee created. Something called virtual unreality. The first virtual entity they run across is a ragged beggar. Doom recognizes that in his culture, this man was a prince. The beggar has sought out Doom, who asks what the man needs of him. It's not what I need. It's what the world needs from you, demands of you. At this point, Doom runs across the first of many former dictators and conquerors. For example, a man with evocative facial hair and a sword bounds in. Let Doom speak to a peer, Attila, greatest of the Huns. He is disappointed that Doom, despite his power, has failed. You have never done what you and all of us have set out to do. Assume the ultimate, the supreme power. Emperor of the world, you know you want it. What are you waiting for? Doom appreciates Attila's point, but does raise the pesky fact that a ruler actually needs people willing to be ruled. A point which Attila doesn't really understand, but if Doom wants a consensus, he can make that happen. Caesar, Napoleon, Genghis Khan, Alexander, they all rally around Doom and offer their support to gain the greatest power of all, but Doom is unimpressed. An assemblage of history's greatest losers? They all banter a bit, go back and forth, and then Caesar offers him the greatest virtual army ever. The fighting men of 100 centuries, from Rome and Carthage, Mongolia and Macedonia, Odessa and Olympia. Napoleon lays some dictatorial wisdom on Doom, who realizes that if destiny beckons, even here in this endless expanse, who is he to ignore the call? Gentlemen, wherever the road leads, whatever the challenge, Doom will lead. Doom takes over the virtual world, eliminating the leaders of his era. Maybe with a trial, maybe without, but either way, his philosophy of conquest is summed up in the phrase, off with their heads. Wire has a few issues with Doom's techniques, and Doom tells him that he should probably address Doom as Emperor now, maybe Your Highness, whichever works for Wire, really. Like Caesar, he proclaims, like Napoleon, like Hammurabi, I now proclaim a new and perfect universal system of law. These judges, because of their human nature, cannot approach the impartiality they pretend. Justice is not blind to them. They see class and race too clearly. These judges will be summarily dismissed. Doom proposes a technological, computer-based justice system, where each case is judged solely on the merits of the case involved. It's his military notions that are the most surprising, perhaps. To keep generals and military leaders from rising up against him, he will eliminate the military. By eliminating borders, they are the reason men sign up and die. Borders inspire the foolish pride of nationalism. Under my reign, the map will be withdrawn. There will be but one homeland. Mine. the dictators all approve. Napoleon declares that they have placed their trust in the right man. Attila leads the army, although Caesar does recommend caution. You can cure men's loyalties, but not their appetites, especially if their appetites run to battle or to war. Wired decides that Doom need not take advice just from warriors, but philosophers as well, but he's actually not impressed by their contributions. Doom is not impressed by the efforts of his warriors. Pacification should have been embraced by now. A foreign emotion creeps upon me. Doubt. Wire appears before Doom, having brought a man who can help him in this dilemma. It is the bum from the beginning of the issue, but he's now in his intended and true form, an old Latverian prince, who Doom at first is unwilling to listen to. He doesn't want to hear the man's rebuke, but his point is clear. No one man can hold dominion over all. The man uses his incredible wellspring of magic to make Victor forget all about this adventure and cancel any events he set in motion. Just as my lore will force you to forget your visit here to the nexus of all realities, it will be as if you and I never arrived here. We return to the first panel of the issue, but instead of diving into virtual unreality this time, Doom demurs. Bah! I have no time for unreality. Only the pragmatic concerns of the real world merit my attention. And then his last words are interesting because they may be a meta-commentary reflecting a reader's views of fill-in issues. The issue ends with Doom saying, "What could I possibly find here that would be worthy of my time?" The end. Well, I did find a few things worthy of my time, but I really do wonder if that last bit of dialogue was actually a dig at this kind of issue. Artists of all stripes can be subversive folk sometimes, and maybe Cologne was being a bit subversive with that closing line. Now, speaking of Ernie Cologne, this is the second of his two fill-ins that he did for this title. He also wrote and drew issue 9, in which Doom and Wire run around in cyberspace. It's actually a version of Doom's subconscious, and the goal of that one was to recover some of Doom's lost memories. That, by the way, was an excellent issue. I'm going to say better than this one. The letters page, Voice of Doom, makes an elliptical reference to a technology issue, being the reason that John Francis Moore missed his deadline on submitting a script for this issue, but I don't put 100% stock in anything printed in a Marvel editorial page. Stan's soapbox was not exactly known as a reliable and accurate source of true Marvel facts and news. And similarly, although that story of a technological bug may very well be true, I'm not going to swallow it hook, line, and sinker. Stanley taught me better than that. But for whatever the reason, we got this issue. Remember, this was in the era of comics when the decision-making was always tilted in favor of getting the book out on time, as opposed to now, where the goal is to let the creative team finish their story, no matter how long that takes. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Doomsday Clock. Now, the consensus of opinion is that this issue takes place between issues 13 and 14, but I'm not sure that any major plot reveals or spoilers happen with this coming here, where it does as issue 16. By the way, these two issues by Cologne land him in a tie for third place for most issues of Doom 2099 scripted. Of the 44 issues, John Francis Moore wrote 23 and a half of them. I'm counting co-writing as half. He wrote the majority of the first 23 issues. Then the book transitioned to Warren Ellis, and the two of them shared credits for 2 issues before fully transitioning to Ellis, who wrote another 13 after that. The other writer who did 2 issues was Tom Pyre, so he and Colon tie for 3rd place, as Pyre wrote a few issues as the title was winding down. And actually, John Francis Moore came back to do the last 2 issues, 43 and 44, which I was glad to see. I think that was a nice touch. But let's talk about this issue for a bit. Back in the era of issues 6, 7, 8, 9, Doom and Wire spent a number of issues in cyberspace. And it's definitely a topic, an idea, a concept, a setting that just hasn't aged well. In 1994, maybe this was cutting edge and cool, extreme. But at this point, it looks silly, especially putting this almost 80 years in the future from now, as it already seems extremely dated. But in terms of the content of the issue, these historical personages that Doom runs across and the interactions that they have, however hokey the framing of this issue may or may not be, the guts of the issue are the conversations that Doom has with these folk, the advice that he gives, the back and forth. And I like that Colon gave Doom a range of political philosophies or positions that don't neatly fit into one version of current political ideology. And yet all of these notions, colorblind justice, no military, no borders, all seem reasonable for a, I don't know, optimistic dictator like Doom. There is a notion called the political horseshoe, or I've called it for a long time, the political spectrum or the political circle. The idea is that at the fringes, many of the ideas of the far left and far right, at least as we describe them in the U.S., may well agree with each other. You know, at the extremes, there's a bending in, perhaps even a connection. For example, the elimination of the military could be viewed as a far-left utopian ideal, or it could be seen as a far-right libertarian ideal. But of all the things that are presented here as part of Doom's platform, the one that strikes me the oddest is the lack of borders. He makes some good points here about different kinds of nationalism and the issues that it brings up, but the idea that Doom would not conquer in the name of Latveria, that he would not raise the Latverian flag above all? I don't think I buy that. But some of the other notions seem potentially Doom-like. I do kind of like the swipe at philosophy, as Wire examines these folk, including a Dalai Lama type of person and an ancient philosopher, and then religion is brought up, and then Wire realizes he's gotten in way over his head and just dismisses them all. And there's the moment where Doom faces doubt, where his reliance on the great warriors of the past, where the warfare seems to be failing in pacifying the populace. It's not working. He's failing. And Colon does a good job getting the vulnerability of Doom, which is something he does not express publicly, but occasionally his private thoughts and monologues do indeed go in that direction. Doom is a lot of things, and self-aware is actually one of them, and an important one. Now, what about that Latverian ex machina at the end? Sure, maybe it comes out of the blue, but all stories of this type need some kind of frame, some excuse to get us out of, whether it's the dream world, an alternate dimension, or in this case, the virtual unreality of cyberspace. You need a tool, a writing trick of some kind, to get us back to our world. Of course, I say they were in virtual unreality. Actually, it turns out they were in the nexus of all realities. And I don't remember if that is a plot seed that develops later, if the nexus developed into something more important in the 2099 universe, or if that's just an Easter egg for the issue. Either way, I thought it was a nice touch. Overall, this is not the greatest issue ever. But then again, it's not really meant to be. Fill-ins are just literally meant to plug a hole in the production schedule. And these days, that notion just seems so out of date to us, because that's just not a priority now. But in the era when fill-ins existed, and Ernie Colon was tasked with producing two of them for this title over about 7 or 8 months, he did what he needed to do, and I think he did just about the best of what he could do. It's not a great issue, but it does have some flashes of greatness, some great moments, some great scenes. You've got a great splash page, you've got a great moment of proclamation, and you've got a couple good monologues, good speeches. At some point, what else do you need? And for a book like this, with this mandate, with these marching orders, that's enough. This does its job, and it does it reasonably well. So that wraps up our coverage of Doom 2099 number 16, bringing this episode to a close. In May, I'm not planning to do any kind of Doom Speak episode, as that spot in the release schedule will go to our contribution to the J.L. May podcasting crossover event covering the Countdown to Infinite Crisis, along with a certain irascible and irredeemable co-host. I'll be covering the Adam Strange miniseries Planet Heist. And I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but at this point in time I am, let's go with, uncertain about the likelihood of having a new issue of the ongoing Doctor Doom in my hot little hands anytime soon. But when we do, that's what we'll cover. Now, if that's not happening in June, maybe I'll pop back in here with some Doom content. Probably a different direction from 2099, maybe supervillain team-up, maybe something else. Maybe it won't have to come to that, but if it does, fear not. Relatively Geeky will continue to be your number one source for true, unvarnished, leaning-in coverage of the great and mighty Doom. If you have any feedback on this episode, on this issue, on the trauma of not having new issues of the ongoing Doctor Doom to read, or anything else related to the good doctor, don't hesitate to contact me. You can do that via email at relativelygeeky@gmail.com or as a comment on our Facebook or blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. As I'm saying to my students in every email that I send them, be calm, be safe, and be wise. And thanks for listening. Take care, and hail Doom.
Hail Doom!